Ben Helfgott, Reel 20.
So eight fell out, and about four of us were left behind. After about a month or 2 months, headmaster decided, in fact, there were five who actually were left behind. The headmaster decided that one, who was a brilliant mathematician, that there was nobody to teach him math anymore, he knew more probably than the teacher, that recommended him to go and to the local Western Municipal College. And then two of us were recommended to go to the local grammar school. So there was a friend of mine and I. And so he sent us for an interview to see the headmaster. His name was Dr. Priestley. He met us, he gave us a test, he says, yes, okay, you'll be all right, you can start. You can start in the next term, which was going to be September 1946. He said, well, if there are any books, that you want for next year, if you want to do some work over the holiday period, you take it and prepare yourself and so on. So we agreed to that, and then we started in September. We were placed in the lower fifth form. After about a month, the teachers felt that our standard is high enough to be moved up to the fifth form. So we were moved up, the following year we set for our school certificate, and then we went into the sixth form and went for the higher school certificate, which we took in 1949.
What was the reaction of the other pupils? Your background was so vastly different from theirs.
Well, at first they were rather, they didn't know how to take us, you see. They were told that I don't know whether they were told that, but that we were a concentration camp. But they were told that we were boys from abroad. The school that we went to was in Plaistow. And the majority of the children who went to that school were children all from Dockett families. There are quite a number of them. But they were all, in order to get into the grammar school, of course, they had to pass their exams. And most of them, they were so poor, or they say poor, they were receiving, in addition to having won this, to be in the school, to go to the grammar school, they also were receiving, I don't know exactly what, I've forgotten what right now what it called it, but it was a, at that time they paid them some small sum of money as well. I can't remember what it was called. I remember that every month they used to get an envelope of some money. Anyway, the point was that we got on very well with them. At first, as I said, they didn't know how to take us. I learned one thing about boys from my early childhood, that they respect brain, they also respect brawn. Now, I didn't know how quickly they will respect our brain, but I knew that brawn, they will respect immediately. And what did I do? I challenged the whole class to a hand wrestle. And they all sort of looked at me sort of rather quizzically. They said that I must be crazy. And I thought, no, come on, for the fun of it, let's have a hand wrestle. I lined them all up, one by one, and within a very short time, seconds, one after the other, I put their hands down. Now, that I felt established one thing. In case there ever anybody wants to have a go at me or whatever, they won't do it. It's looking back, of course, I think it was very puerile and very stupid. But at the same time, I think one must understand what happened to me, what kind of background I had, what experience I had. And since I have always abhorred violence, and I never ever in my life have I ever raised my hand against anybody. I've never done it. I was never the first one. I always had to be hit first before I hit back. And then I hit back with a vengeance. All I wanted to do was to prevent, in case there is somebody who's trying to be clever, to prevent this. And I knew the only thing I could do this is by way of showing them that it's no point, if there is a disagreement, to solve a disagreement with a fight. And that is precisely what happened. They had tremendous respect right away. But the other thing that really made a great impact on them was when it came to the gymnasium. Although I have not had the opportunity to go to a gymnasium for many years, but the minute I came into a gymnasium, I was at home, and what's more, I was performing like I would have performed it, on the box. I was flying over the boxes. I was doing somersaults. I was doing whatever the teacher showed us to do. I was doing it and plus. And in fact, there was only one other boy who was anywhere near me. So I was immediately ahead as far as when it came to gymnastics, or not just because gymnastics in England is not like at that time it wasn't like it is today. I mean, there weren't the same kind of facilities or the same kind of attitude toward it. But I was a natural and I enjoyed it. As I said, I was released. There was something that I was that was in me, and I never had an opportunity to do anything. And now suddenly there it was. I looked forward to my gymnastics. I looked forward, of course, to playing football and whatever games there was. There was no question about that. But you see, in football, there are many people who can kick a ball, you know, and you don't sort of, it's difficult to say who is better and who is not better. But there are certain sports where you can assert yourself almost immediately. I mean, in the gymnasium, you can assert yourself, and that's what happened. So I struck up many very close friendships. I mean, of course, I realized that there was no question about ever having any disagreements or fights with the boys, because it just didn't occur. The boys didn't fight there either. I mean, there wasn't a question of cliques, of groups ganging up one against the other. Well, this just somehow it didn't happen. I mean, they were very nice boys, very nice girls. Teachers were always very helpful.
How did the teachers deal with your experiences, or did they not deal with them?
Well, they just accepted us as we were, and they were very nice and very helpful. They said to me that if ever I want to do whatever work I want to do extra, they will correct it for me, and they spend extra time with me if I wanted to. And when I took up economics, for instance, I had a teacher there who was came to study art, to take art, but he also had a degree in economics, and they wanted to start, and economics was only just sort of starting at school, and the headmaster suggested that I do economics, so he said to me, look, if you want to do economics for your O levels, you can do that. And in 6 months he prepared me, and I took my O levels in economics, in just 6 months. And it was only because this teacher was very very ready to help me. The teacher said, if you want to write any extra essays or whatever, I will help you. They were wonderful. I mean, the 3 years that I spent at school were really my formative years. I became. If I ever thought I was human, I really became human. I learned a great deal to relax and to trust. It was an education, not just in education and learning new subjects and learning English, but it was an education in growing up with ordinary children. And I found that I adjusted myself very quickly to it. And I look back on these years as really wonderful years. I mean, I said the children were wonderful.
Did you not feel there was a big gap between you and the other boys your age, simply because of your experience?
Well, yes. In some ways, I was years ahead of them. But really, I caught up very quickly in terms of education, and I really was only, in terms of age, only about a year difference. Considering that I've lost 5 years, I caught up 4 years. I did not feel handicapped as far as learning the subject. But I felt older in many, many ways. I mean, I felt older in terms of understanding about life. Sexually, I was no older than the other boys. My experience in that respect was not more advanced. I would say it was very much on a par. But in every other way, I would say I was years ahead. But that did not stop me from sort of putting myself on a level together with them. I would never sort of sit and talk to them about my experiences. I would never sort of go and preach to them about what life is all about how difficult life can be and so on. I mean, it just simply didn't come into it.
Were you homesick for Poland?
Was I homesick for Poland? Well,
perhaps for your relatives who still live there.
I was not homesick for Poland. I was nostalgic. But I was not nostalgic for Poland. I was nostalgic for my family, for my uncles, my cousins, my aunts, my friends, all the people whom I've lost. And I would often think about them, just like I do now. And for that kind of life, I was very, very nostalgic. I missed it a lot. And I missed it especially when it used to be during the Jewish festivals. Because the Jewish festival was always, in Poland, was always something special. It was always a special occasion. It was something that one always rejoiced. One always prepared for it. There was this extra special food, and there was the prayers, and there were the jollification. It was really quite unique, something that I have never been able to recapture. Nor have I tried to recapture, because I don't think it will ever happen.
Did you live in the same place as your sister while she was in London then?
No, my sister shared a room with another girl, and I shared a room with some other friends.
But in the same building?
No. Different place altogether.
Did you see a lot of your sister?
Afterwards, when we moved out of the hostels, there was a policy that we move out of hostels when everybody goes to work, and it's time that they become independent. They live separately, or two or three together. And because of it, it was the person who was a psychologist who was in charge of us. He thought that he must create a place for us to meet. And so he started off a club, which we called the Primrose Club, which because it was the exchange was at that time Primrose. No connection with the Primrose League or conservative leanings. I don't think any one of us at the time had any conservative leanings anyway. So the club was formed in 1947, and the club was formed in the place where it used to be where I used to be in the hostel, because we moved from Loughton to Belsize Park. And when I went to school, I used to live in the on top of the where the club was. And my sister used to come to the club. But my sister was handicapped with me, I must admit. The reason why she was handicapped was because whenever she used to go out with a boy, she subsequently told me this, that the boys always were frightened, because they were frightened of me because of what I might do to them, you know, in case they might have some ideas with her. So the boys really in the club would never sort of take her out. Not because, because my sister was really quite an attractive young girl, very pretty face. Even now, everybody tells me what a pretty face she has and how charming she is, and quite an intelligent girl, very articulate. And so there was no problem about that then. But the problem was I, because I seemed to. I don't know where I gave them this impression, but obviously I must give this impression, because even now my wife tells me that I'm a very lucky man, that I haven't got, that I've got no daughters, but only sons, because I simply belong. I'm still very conservative when it comes to conservative with a small c, you know, when it comes to sort of attitude of women and girls and boys, you know. So I suppose there must be something in it. So I used to see her, but as I said, she sort of found her own group of friends.
How had she coped with her experiences? Did you feel she was very different?
Well, she seemed to cope quite well. She adjusted herself very quickly. She learned English very quickly, and she was active in various groups. And by 1950, she got married at the age of 19. So she solved a lot of her problems by getting married very quickly. If there were any problems, I don't think there were any problems, because she's quite a well-adjusted person. She has got a son and a daughter.
How did she respond to the news about your father? Did she ask you about what had happened?
Yes, I told her about it. I wrote to her about it. And, well, I don't know, I've never discussed it with her, really. I don't think I ever told her what was my reaction. We've never discussed this particular question, how we reacted to it.
How do you feel that this whole experience and the loss of so many close members of your family has affected your life?
Well, it has affected my life very deeply in so far that I am never far away from them. Normally, when you grow up under normal conditions, you accept your family for granted. You accept your cousins, your uncles, your parents. You accept them all for granted because you are around them. You don't even take any notice of them. In fact, you don't even sometimes want to see them. And it's a natural way of growing up when you say, well, it's my uncle or my aunt lives somewhere, whatever, in some other place or in the same town. And if they die, you sort of accept it. It's natural. Now, to me, they have never died. They're with me always. I think of them always. I think of my cousins. I think of my aunts, my uncles, and my friends. I don't think there is a day that goes by that I don't think of them. Now, so in this way, it has affected me very deeply, because it takes up a lot of or some of my time that probably I would have been thinking about other things. I don't think about them consciously, but all kinds of situations, association of ideas, bring it about. that I don't think about. I don't think of everybody in one go, but of somebody or other I keep thinking. There's always something that happens to me every day, whether I read or I hear or something, that does not trigger off the thought of them. Now this does not happen to any normal person. When I say normal, a person who's had a normal upbringing. And I don't know whether it had the same effect on every survivor, but it definitely had this effect on me. And I really don't want to push them out of my mind. I do want to cherish their memory, because I know that as long as I live, they live on. And I feel that my life is really a gift, because I could have been as easily destroyed as they were. So I don't want to throw this gift away and say, well, look, I want to forget about it. I've had enough, I don't want to know about it, therefore I've got to concentrate on everything else. I feel that it is more than a duty for me. The least I can do is to remember them, not to allow their memory to be erased.
Do you feel that the experience has made you bitter at all? Do you feel bitter about
it? No, I have never felt bitter. I may have had, my immediate reaction when something terrible happened may have been one of immediate violence or of immediate bitterness. But once it was over, after an hour or a few minutes for that matter, I have not had any bitterness. I can't think of an occasion where I would be bitter. It simply does not. It's not part of my psyche. It's not part of me. It is not in my nature. I find it very easy to forgive people. If somebody has done something wrong, and the person comes to me and says, look, I'm awfully sorry, I shouldn't have done it, this and this, there is nothing more that I can do. I can't even say to the person, why should you have done it? Why did you do it? He said it, he's done it. That is why this is the quarrel, if I can call it a quarrel, that I have with the Poles. The fact that they will not accept the fact that they were anti-Semitic before the war, that during the war, because of their attitudes, many Jews could have been saved if their attitudes would have been, say, a little bit more favorable towards us. If they would have simply been passive and not identifying us, who we were, a lot more Jews would have survived. Now, I don't feel bitter to the Poles because of this. I feel sorry for them, because their loss was also great. They lost a great deal more than they realized by throwing away our friendship. And I don't in any way feel bitter to them. But I do feel that what they are trying to do is to perpetuate a myth that they helped the Jews. Of course, there were some Poles who helped the Jews, and we are the first ones to acknowledge the fact that they helped us. But all they have to do is to come to terms. Just like a person comes to terms with oneself when one has done something that one is not very happy about, one is not very proud of. The minute a person comes to terms, the person feels a lot better for it, because you've admitted it, you face the facts. The Poles don't want to do it, and there is a new generation growing up being fed and bred on the propaganda that the Jews are ungrateful, that the Poles have helped them, and now they call this Zionist propaganda, which has got nothing to do with Zionism, that they are deliberately destroying the good name of the Polish people in the world by saying that the Poles have been helped the Germans, which is not the case at all. I have not been bitter, and I cannot be bitter. And sometimes I say, it was, I think, Arthur Kessler who said, that the person who does not hate does not love. And I'm very worried about that, because I think that I do love. But maybe he might have something in it, but I don't know. All I know is this, that I cannot hate. I have no reason to hate people. I love people. I believe in humanity. I think that whatever one wants to think, whatever faith one might have, I think in the final analysis, the world is based on people. That we have only one life, and we should make the most of ourselves, we should try to understand ourselves, and we should live together, irrespective whether we believe in one God or another God. There's only a name to it, because it is in the final analysis, it is a God. We believe in something intangible. And we should always try to help one another. And I have been, and this has been the effect on me, that I have, since I've come out from the concentration camp, I have always tried to help. I have never tried to run down anybody. If I haven't got anything good to say for a person, I won't say anything against the person. Because I think most people have got a lot of goodness in them. It's a question of how to bring it out. It's a question of how one approaches it, and so on. I mentioned that that is part of me, is part of my past that I cannot forget. And some people will say, well, look, you know, this can be very destructive. But I found that this is not destructive. On the contrary, this is very constructive to me. This is something that sustains me. It gives me a sense of balance. In spite of the fact that I have retained my memory and vivid memory of everything that has happened to me and to my relatives and to my friends, I have achieved possibly as much, if not more, than many, many people who have completely rejected or neglected their past. I lead a very full life, in spite of the fact that I have the past with me. My life is full, whether it is by way of sport, by way of social engagements, by way of constant studying and learning about ourselves, and very deep involvement in the community, Jewish and non-Jewish. And of course, giving time of my and of myself to my family. It hasn't stopped me from competing, for instance, in two Olympic Games. It hasn't stopped me from being a British champion for 7 years. There's nothing that...